Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of The Dunker Spot coming your way. First, LeBron James has finally made his debut. We talk about what we saw, what we liked, what we didn't like, what we may see moving forward with LeBron on both ends of the floor. Then we talk about the Charlotte Hornets. We have some LaMelo Ball news, smoke, etc. So we talk through how we may have gotten here, what are some pathways out of it, and some potential teams if this is actually going to be the end. We also get incredibly sad about the Sacramento Kings and where they're at, and we trade some of their players. So if that is the thing that interests you, this is going to be the episode for you. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nakias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here, and ready to talk about some basketball.
We're going to continue to talk some hoops. First, we have a debut to talk about, Steve. LeBron James is back.
Yes.
We've talked about Luka Doncic and his greatness. We've talked about Austin Reeves and the start that he's been on. And now you add into the fold for the first time this year, made a season debut on Tuesday night, LeBron James. So this is our first window into these three together for this particular season. It's going to be interesting to see just how he settled in, what it's going to look like scheme-wise, what the touch distribution is going to be like, etc. And in this game, a win over the Utah Jazz, 29 minutes for LeBron James, 12 points, 11 assists and a steal. Also had three rebounds in there. And so, Steve, I want to toss this to you first, a little bit of a role reversal. What stood out to you in this LeBron debut?
There's no role reversal about the what stood out question, but I think this is more, it's good to have LeBron James back playing basketball. It was just kind of an odd sensation to start the season without LeBron James. I guess that's preparing us for the future, but we'll deal with that when we get there. The impact for the Lakers is, again, you just add. And I think it's fun to see kind of a reverse for Los Angeles. I feel like most years it's been like, all right, we're going to try and do things differently. We're going to try and do this offensively, defensively. Doesn't quite work. Hey, LeBron, can you help us out? Oh, no, LeBron, this is a long season. Are you okay? Instead, we've gotten this start from Luka Doncic, who's been on fire all season. We've gotten this type of growth from Austin Reeves. We've gotten production from DeAndre Ayton. And J.J. Redick has been preaching habits this entire time. So now LeBron can come into the fold and have a night where he shoots single-digit field goal attempts against Utah Jazz and have a night where he's occasionally sprinkling in going turbo in transition or looking to keep it moving in the half court. And so that is where it's like, okay, LeBron can still do the LeBron things. That's going to help elevate us as opposed to LeBron doing the LeBron things being the base. So that was probably the biggest thing for me and watching him just kind of get into the flow, the patterns the Lakers can get to where, okay, we have Luka Reeves and LeBron out there. We can go just Luka. We can go LeBron and Reeves. That's fantastic. I think it should be a boost for DeAndre Ayton just to have another person he can play pick and roll with. But I think the ways that they use LeBron, especially in the half court, he's still going to attack matchups. He's still going to poke at players. And so, unfortunately, the Utah Jazz are the debut team. So, Keontae George, it's going to be me and you. And I think the interesting part was it wasn't just pick and roll to get LeBron to switch or use LeBron as a screener. It was getting him some cross screens into the post so he can get a catch and make the defense think about it. Where do you want to send help from? You want to help from middle? You want help from the baseline? You help from the baseline, DeAndre Ayton's at the dunker spot. I did the thing. And you have optionality as far as you put Luka Doncic one pass away or Austin Reeves one pass away right from LeBron. You put the other guy in the corner, which is technically three passes away. Then you put maybe the non-shooter two passes away. So it cut, it sliced. So if you want to show help from the middle, we counted that way. Random times where, you know, LeBron swings to Luka, Austin Reeves comes from the corner, sets a back pick for him. Now you have LeBron against Keontae George in the middle of the paint. Hey, we like that. And we didn't necessarily have to take 15 seconds to set up that post up. So that kind of flow stuff is what popped to me at first. What about you, Nikas?
I like it. I mean, one, I want to bounce off of your general point that it is cool to still have LeBron playing NBA basketball and doing so at a high level. And so I appreciate the fact that we get to just witness greatness this late into his career. I'd also say, just on a broader note, for a guy to make his season debut, you know, the record is the record for the Utah Jazz, but in terms of how they want to play, and where they want to space their guys and the movie they can get into. Like, that is a tough debut, especially when you are LeBron James coming off of back injury, back pain, etc. So there's a lot of movement to kind of slice through. So having this performance in the midst of that, I do think it's also impressive. I wanted to hang first on how quickly LeBron was moving the ball. Ended up with 73 touches in this basketball game, but it didn't feel like he was attempting to impose his will all that often. And I don't even say that in a negative sense. It was very clear, to your point, you've been cooking Luka, you've been cooking Austin Reeves, you've been cooking DeAndre Ayton. I'm just here to add to the party. Don't mind me. I can rev it up if you need me to, but I am here to enhance what y'all are already doing versus I need the LeBron package. And so to that end, 73 touches, he only brought the ball up across half court 14 times in this game. And you're normally looking at like more than double that as LeBron initiates actions. And that's including like some of the transition stuff for him. So only 14 through a full game. It's kind of eye-popping, especially when you compare it to other games from previous seasons. I'm not going to bore you with those numbers, but yeah, just this is kind of a rare thing. Also on that, passed on 82% of his touches, not always assist opportunities, but again, flows into, I want to keep the ball moving. Let's keep things popping in the half court. 2.5 seconds per touch, Steve. 1.6 dribbles per touch. This was a very loud, I am keeping this thing moving game. So I appreciated that point. To the usage, I was intrigued more so by the second quarter, because I think that's where you really started to feel more of, let's actually incorporate LeBron into this. That's where you got some of, you know, to your earlier point, some of LeBron as a screener. Let's see if we can poke at Keontae George. They open the second quarter. With that, that ends up being an immediate foul, so you don't get a shot attempt or anything like that. But it's like, okay, we're going to poke at this matchup. Let's see what happens. And then you look at the opening possession of the third quarter. I think this is something that you and the great Zach Lowe talked about. Enjoyed that episode. Check that out, Dunkers, as well. That opening possession of the third quarter, where you get a similar LeBron screening for Austin Reeves. As that's happening, here's DeAndre Ayton setting a flare for Luka Doncic. So it's just like, okay, we're going to blend. We get the early LeBron touch in that second quarter. Now let's do the same thing and add something else on top of that. And so like you kind of see them building off of these kind of touches for him. In addition to, we still just have Austin. We still have Luka. At any given time, they can kind of poke at things.
Well, I think that's why, to me, I'm intrigued by what they try and do when those three are on the court together. I think the Luka package is the Luka package. You can always rev LeBron up in different ways. And Austin Reeves' growth as a pick and roll player, I think, makes it an easier fit next to those two, because if a possession breaks down, he's grown in pick and roll and kind of make the right reads and get downhill. He can score. So it just kind of opens things up. So where are the attempts going to be? You know, I think they sprinkled in some elbow action where you have an elbow catch and you got Luka flaring. And okay, we got some movement off this. Can we go side to side? Like you mentioned, that first play of the second half where the defense has to feel both of them, you know, this is still an odd sight where the Lakers have Luka Doncic in a pick and roll and the defense is, you know, we're helping. Big is there because I can't leave Luka. Defense has to help them. And it's a kick to LeBron James on the perimeter. And it's like, that's not, LeBron James is supposed to be attacking closeouts. Like, that's not usually how that works. It's still jarring to my mind. So it's like, they can really push different things and do different things. I want to see how they build it out because it's going to be important. And the, to your point, you know, great numbers on LeBron and the touches and keeping it moving. That's going to be important as more teams lean into switching against the Lakers, which I anticipate they will. I mean, it's one of those things where we can talk about Reeves cross-screening. LeBron and Luka have to be a little bit more side-to-side as far as one does one thing or one's an entry passer for the other. Because if you set a screen, if they screen for each other, it's just going to be a switch. And so that's just a personal, I would like this matchup more than like we're going to get two on the ball there. So how do they kind of navigate that and how do they find openings when those things happen?
Now, I'm glad you brought up the entry point bit, because one of the plays that I had in my notes, I want to say it was in the second quarter when you did end up having those three together, is LeBron entering the ball into Luka in the post on the left side of the floor and seeing the amount of help that Luka is still seeing. They had Austin Reeves in the opposite corner, as you mentioned, some of the spacing things that the Lakers can get into to kind of strain your defense. It's LeBron entry to Luka. Austin Reeves kind of clears out to the weak side corner, so Keontae George is technically low. They want to send extra help, and it's like a singular step towards Luka from Yusuf Nurkic, and it's just a lob to DeAndre Ayton. I'm just like, what on earth are you supposed to do with that?
Well, if you judge by Will Hardy's reaction, not leave that early.
Yeah, that's probably the actual answer. But yeah, it's just like they can just put you in so many difficult spots. And I think, kind of zooming out, because you've already alluded to it, I am curious to see, like, as LeBron gets more into game shape and game rhythm and things, when those three are on the floor, like, how much, if at all, will we see some of the half-court aggression perk up for LeBron? Because to your earlier point, you did start to see him hit the turbo button a little bit in transition. There was an early assist for him. There's another fast break basket. There was another one where he drew a foul early in that first half. And I just wonder, in the half court, as he was keeping things moving, here's a screen, like, even some of the pick and roll reps that he had in that first half, when they were all three on the floor together, it was a dribble or two. Y'all didn't get me two on the ball. Here you go, Austin, or here you go, Luka. Now, I don't think that's inherently bad, but I do wonder when there are going to be these pockets where, okay, Luka's the one getting the attack closeouts because LeBron is actively looking to puncture the defense and draw that extra attention versus let's just keep things moving.
Well, I mean, I think it'll come based off of flow. I mean, LeBron's a pretty smart basketball player, so I think he'll know when to pick his spots and when, hey, we need to get this going. But I think the overall ethos has to be, we don't have to do that to open things up. This can add to what we use to open things up. And I think that's probably the place you want to live. Because you mentioned early in the game, once the game got later, LeBron was getting two on the ball and he was starting to slice the defense up because he's a great passer. And so you put two on the ball against LeBron, pocket passes there, skip passes there to Austin Reeves. He can just make those plays pretty easily. So now, again, defenses are back in a bind with, okay, what coverages do we give these guys? Because what does it open up? And so that's where it gets interesting. How many teams want to give them that? How many teams want to switch? How many teams are going to allow LeBron to kind of just roam like that? I think the transition is important, though. You mentioned how many times you brought the ball up past half court. Him getting throwaheads in transition, I think, is a really good thing for the Lakers.
No, I like that one. Luka got him on one early, relatively early in that one. It was one of my favorite possessions from LeBron. I want to say early third quarter. But LeBron contests a three. They miss. Luka board, immediate outlet. It was like, ah, yes, we're starting to get some of these early hit-aheads to LeBron or some of these early transition seals. That wasn't the direct seal. But immediate hit to LeBron, takes a dribble, draws a defender. Here's Austin Reeves streaking down the right side of the floor and gets a layup. It's like, ah, yes. I am excited to watch these full court passes again between these two. And I think that's an easy way for LeBron to make his impact felt as a scorer or just as a paint threat in general without it having to come in the half court. So I agree that the transition is going to be very important for him.
Well, very quickly, back to your half court point, I wonder if toning down how much he has to do at times allows you to do more in the half court. So now, elbow action, hey, DeAndre Ayton, you set a screen for LeBron James. LeBron James, you get a catch, and now you run pick and roll. And so we can give you some of these quick bursts in the half court as opposed to you have to initiate or catch at the elbow or it takes too long to develop. I'm intrigued by that portion. Like, I think the interplay between LeBron and DeAndre Ayton is going to be important for the Lakers.
No, I think that's fair. I think this wrinkle in middle of the second quarter, more so flow in the half court. But Marcus Smart just kind of sets this pin in for LeBron on the left wing to knock down a three. And it's like, okay, this is, to your point, not weird negative, but it's just like, we don't usually see LeBron in these kind of spots receiving these types of looks. Like, I think a subplot of the Lakers' tenure for LeBron went on the court is that, like, the three-point shooting has gotten better, and he seems more comfortable taking and making catch-and-shoot threes. If you're actually getting some random flares, random pin-ins, and things like that for him because you can just lean on Austin Reeves or Luka Doncic as initiators, that's another flavor of LeBron that defenses have to deal with. And as you mentioned, you botch that at all, this can just be a drive. And from there, he can make any pass in the book. So I'm intrigued by some of the stuff, or a lot of the stuff, honestly, that we saw from LeBron offensively. Just going to be tracking, like, how much of this in terms of the actual diet remains consistent versus what gets ramped up, what gets ramped down.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Marcus Smart, because I really enjoyed the lineup where it was Marcus Smart, Luka, Austin Reeves, LeBron, and DeAndre Ayton. I think that's because Marcus Smart can guard a whole bunch of people. Him and Lauri Markkanen were going back and forth as far as Marcus Smart trying to deny in front and Lauri Markkanen saying, hey, can you not do that? And so I am really intrigued to see how the lineups balance out and how much that helps the Lakers lineup versatility from the standpoint of, okay, we have the pieces rolling to the earlier point. So Rui Hachimura is having a heck of a year. We have our starting lineup. If it goes a certain way, Luka can continue on. Then we come back with LeBron and Austin Reeves. And then, you know, guys have been playing well, like Jake LaRavia, Gabe Vincent. They can mix in with that group. And now we can kind of interplay. And depending on who has it going, we can start the fourth with this. Like, it's just feels better for the Lakers in that sense that there's more things they can get to as opposed to I hope this works.
Yeah. I think is a very obvious and immediate bonus, or luxury rather, that the Lakers can just have two of LeBron, Austin Reeves, Luka on the floor at all times. And so even to your point, just kind of tracking, okay, when exactly are these subs happening? Like Luka's normally been, I play the full first, play the full third, kind of come into the second halves of the second and the fourth, et cetera. Like the fact that you can now fill those minutes with two of those high level guys now, with Reeves and LeBron versus Reeves plus, okay, what do you have for us, Jake LaRavia, who has been playing well, but like, it's just a different level of defensive attention that you can draw. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
No, let's get to your thoughts, pal. Let's get to the truth.
The truth?
Let's get to how you felt about this LeBron James debut, because we talked about one side of the basketball. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the overall game, Nekias Duncan?
I would give the overall grade a positive one. I think it was overall a good game for LeBron, and overall a good debut. Now, if there are things for me to pick at with this LeBron performance, with the obvious caveat that this is his first game of the season.
No caveats for you. No caveats. Give me your true opinion.
I'm giving you the true opinion. I want to make sure that I...
No, you know, caveat.
I want to make sure we have the right context and things. But I will say, the defense did stress me out early in that game. And I think the broader picture for this Lakers group is going to be, and I think we've talked about this before, either on the pod or in one of our watch parties, is just how much is LeBron going to help this defense at full force? I think ultimately he is going to make it better because of what he can do on the back line, et cetera, but he does have to do it. And so as far as the debut goes, he was caught flat-footed quite a bit, particularly in that first quarter, to where he has Speed Mikhailiuk, gets caught. There's a three. He loses Keontae George on a three above the break. There was another possession late in the first quarter, I want to say like a minute or so to go, where Lauri Markkanen is starting around like the left block area. I think LeBron is expecting a switch on kind of screening action that's happening ahead of time. Doesn't happen. LeBron lags behind. It's like, oh snap, well, I guess I got to get Lauri. Gets up to Lauri. There's, I think, a handoff in the right corner. Switch that. LeBron then goes, sticks with the corner. I think it's Bryce Sensabaugh or someone. Lauri Markkanen gets a wide open three out of that. And it's like, ooh, you can't really afford to have these kind of breakdowns, especially if the Lakers are going to continue to be this switch heavy group. You just kind of have to be locked in on that front. And so like those kind of plays stood out. And I think beyond that, I didn't love like some of the effort on the defensive glass in terms of either high pointing the ball or finding bodies to box out. That got better as the game went on. It was like really good in the second half. So I want to give them that. And so for me, my broader thing is, if LeBron is going to be doing less of the heavy lifting offensively, the theory goes you should have more energy to do more of the little things on the other end and ultimately be able to ramp things up overall defensively. And I still think he will. But like the debut, he had some moments where it's like, ooh, it cannot be this LeBron.
So breaking news, LeBron James, who has played the most seasons in NBA history, year 23, mm-hmm. Is 40, turns 41 next month, mm-hmm. recently coming off sciatica,
uh-huh.
didn't look A-plus on defense on day one. Is that what you're telling me?
This may shock you, but yes, there were some defensive possessions where it could have been better.
Nekias, I hope your back stays intact as you age.
Listen, so far so good. But again, like in all seriousness, was I expecting LeBron to look like an all defense candidate in literal game one, especially with the concepts you laid out? No, I didn't. Which is why I still land on this was a good performance. It's more so, okay, this is what it was in game one. What is it going to look like in game five? What is it going to look like in game 15, et cetera? It's just kind of building the base out. Like, I don't think it's always going to look like the first quarter of the Utah game.
Well, I mean, I think, one, Utah is a very unique offensive team as far as the movement that they possess. And he's playing, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but at least 5 to 6 people who were born after he debuted at some point. I'm just going to guess that's correct.
Oh, the graphic, I think, was 82 NBA players have been born since his debut. It's insane.
At least a handful were in that game. So, I mean, it happens. I think the thing for me is you have to see how much he helps them with their weak side defense and the rotations that he makes and the activity that he has stunning out of the corner, his ability to scram switch people out of matchups. Those are the things that are going to help the Lakers' defense. And those are things that LeBron James can play free safety in Rome. It doesn't matter how old he is. He's still one of the best defenders in the game, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. When he's locked in, he just knows exactly what's going to happen. So how much can they get him to that? How much can they live with overall their defensive package to where they feel comfortable with different coverages and they feel comfortable with different lineups? That's me's key.
No, I think that's fair. And I would say to that end, again, first quarter was shaky. Like the effort overall, just in terms of what he was doing with his matchup, what he was doing off the ball, some of the rebounding stuff, like all of that got better from second quarter onward. So it could just, it probably just was, I need to ramp up. I just got to get back used to this. So like, I think it's going to be fine overall. I want to say that. And even to that end, to your point about when he does really lock in, et cetera, one of the things that popped for me wasn't even anything that logged in the box score. I want to say early second quarter, where he notices some kind of cut happening and he's hugged up in the right corner. And then he jumps it. You just see like the 0 to 80, maybe not 0 to 100 like it used to, but 0 to 80 flies in, gets the deflection, almost gets the steal, ball trickles out of bounds. He's like, ah, I almost had that one. I'm just like, yep, that's still in there. And like, again, you don't expect him to tap into literally that 100% of the time because nobody does. But the fact that that is still in there is an encouraging sign. And so just kind of building out the per possession consistency is something I'm going to be tracking moving forward. Because I think he can really help on that front. So it's not just going to be, we switch literally everything, here's the shell, etc. If he's able to make more of those kind of plays, doesn't have to be as splashy, but just in general have that kind of presence on the back line, that does give you the opportunity to, hey, we can creep DeAndre Ayton up to the level for these next three possessions because we got LeBron lurking behind. You can just kind of mix more stuff in. So, oh yeah, just some things. Caught the eye, but I think he's going to be fine overall. Is there anything on this LeBron thing that we didn't hit on?
For me, I hit most of the things I want to talk about. Is there anything you wanted to add to the table?
I don't think so. I talked about the Marcus Smart flare about 8 minutes in the second quarter. Like, that was a fun one for me. Just the overall playmaking. You mentioned the 12 assists, but like, you just see how quickly he maps out the floor and just the placement, the velocity on some of the passes. It's nice to get the reminder of, hey, this is a historically great passer of the basketball, even on the non-assist stuff. Wanted to make sure I said that again, but other than that, I think we pretty much nailed it. Like, solid stuff. I think the Lakers are going to enjoy having these three on the floor together. And as you mentioned, Steve, the versatility in terms of their lineups and the combinations that they can get into. So, yeah. Good stuff for LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers.
Speaking of good stuff, we'll have more good stuff for y'all after we take this break.
And we are back, Steve, and we're here to talk about the Charlotte Hornets, though not in the way that I would envision us having a Charlotte Hornets segment on this here podcast based on my history, but that's okay. Our own Kelly Eco over at Yahoo Sports dropped the bomb last night that star guard LaMelo Ball, end quote, has grown increasingly frustrated with the organization and is open to a trade away from the franchise. This, according to multiple sources, we'll say Bleacher Report's Jake Fisher, I think during one of his streams, said he could report with confidence that the Hornets aren't actively looking to move LaMelo, which is not the same thing as LaMelo is off limits. LaMelo Ball also quote tweeted the report from Kelly with just a singular clown emoji, which could be, this report is not true. It could be in reference to, I think Kelly mentioned, some league execs feel like the LaMelo contract is an albatross. It could be that. Whatever the case may be, we do have this report. And I just... this isn't where I thought we were going to be a month into the season, Steve, with the Hornets. I'm going to be honest with you. I was intrigued by the early flashes. Matter of fact, our first like regular season takeaway episode that we had during this regular season, I started to play our shout out section with LaMelo Ball, with some of the drives, with Charlotte going to more flat spacing and more guard screens and what that can open up for him and the way he's playing. And I said during that little spiel, like, hey, we can be normal about LaMelo. We can praise him without going over the top. We can criticize him without going over the top. And I'll be darned if we're not a month into this. And it is now, LaMelo has been like benched multiple times throughout the healthy stretch of his season because of defense or turnovers or whatever the case may be. They're fresh off of a loss to what's left of the Indiana Pacers, and we get this report. And so just on a baseline level, I'm just kind of annoyed that this is where it's at. Like, this should be like positive momentum for the Hornets overall. They seem to have nailed this draft. The front office and head coach, there seems to be like real alignment and positive momentum there. I just want to watch the Hornets grow. I don't think this is the cloud that I wasn't ready for. I'll be honest. I didn't think this is where we're going to be.
Well, this appears to be where we're at, or this at least appears to be where we're headed. And it's very interesting to think about how we got here, what we got here, what we're doing. Because you mentioned, hey, I was a fan of pre-injury, right? Mm-hmm. He was averaging 24, 10 assists, and 8 rebounds. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can forget that portion of the program. Like, he was playing pretty well. And now we've had multiple benchings. We've had, hey, you're coming out with 7 minutes, coming back in with 2 minutes type scenarios, and then you're not coming back in, even though we were down 20. When I put you back in, now we're down 10. And it could be leads to frustration. Mm-hmm. And this feels like both sides just kind of understanding potentially this might not be what we need to do. And it happens in life, Dekaius.
Mm-hmm. That's true. A quick question, unrelated to the LaMelo thing. Did you expect to be talking about rotation patterns as much as we've had to talk about rotation patterns and sub patterns so far this year?
We should talk about it more, because a lot of people like to say rotations without understanding what a rotation is. And what affects the rotation and foul trouble and how that works. And we can do a whole podcast on rotations if you like. I won't be nice during it, but.
Oh, well, I feel like that latter part is where I lose. I was like, ooh, this is it? And I can pull up the old popcorn machine, get into some rotation patterns, et cetera. It don't matter. But no, we don't want me.
That's a joke. That's a joke. I'm joking.
This segment. Yeah, I know. It's got to play it up. But I will just say, to bounce off of your frustration point, I think it's easy to understand why LaMelo would be frustrated within this context. Like, one, no player wants to be sat down during a game, non-injury / fatigue bit. No player wants to have a mistake happen or they have a lapse and, nah, you sit down to me. And that is even more heightened when you are literally the best player on the team. And within the context of all of the how serious is LaMelo and everything, like going back to the pre-draft cycle and stuff, I can understand why there would be a heightened level of frustration about anything that would help this perception of I am not serious at what I do. I am not as good at what I do as y'all should think that I am. And Steve, you already mentioned the numbers that he was putting up. Again, I shouted him out to start out the year. And so it's easy to understand like where there would be frustration. Now, to the I'm frustrated enough to want out of here, I don't know. This is Kelly's report, not mine. I trust Kelly. I don't think he's going to put out anything that hasn't been vetted, et cetera. But like, I just literally do not know. I've not talked to LaMelo, et cetera. But like, it's easy to see that part. On the other side of this, I do think there is a level of, I don't know, like accountability is just, it's not a buzzword, it's a very real thing, but it's like the way that people use accountability sometimes can get kind of tricky, so I don't want to be in that bucket. But like, I don't think Charles Lee would bench LaMelo Ball if LaMelo loses a drive and an offensive player is good and he wins a drive. I think some of the defensive things are like, LaMelo, why are you standing straight up and staring at the ball and your guy is lifting up to the wing and getting a shot or a drive or cutting behind you and getting up a layup? And like, that has been a pretty consistent thing throughout his career. Like, I think it is okay, as Charles Lee, going back to last year, has been very adamant about, these are the standards and the habits that I want to establish with this group so we can get to where we want to get to. He's not blowing smoke about that. And so, like, I don't think it's out of bounds for Charles Lee to say, hey, you are our best guy. We need you to set a tone. You, LaMelo, have literally talked about wanting to be better and setting a tone. And so for Charles Lee, who's still relatively new in Charlotte, and if you want to zoom all the way out, new ownership, new GM, et cetera, it's hard to say we want to build a culture of accountability and effort, et cetera, if your best guy can have like very loud lapses, particularly off the ball, without being held to account in any kind of way. Like, I think it gets very tricky. It's easy to understand what stars play by different rules generally, but like, it's hard to be like, LaMelo, do your thing because we need you. And then like, you're yelling at Con Knipple for blowing an assignment or something like that. Not saying that's literally happened, but you get the general point that I'm making. It's, you want to be able to go up to literally everyone. Like, I think back to recent interview with Becky Hammon, where she talked about, yeah, I can go in just kind of light into Asia about her defense. And she's one of the best defenders the league has seen. But like, I can hold her accountable. And because I can hold her accountable and she takes that, who else in that locker room can say anything if I can do that with her? So like, that's where I'm just like, I would like for LaMelo to own some of that. Not even into the offense yet, but like, there is room for him to own some of that at the very least. Like, I don't think that's something that should be taken personally. Is that fair? Or
Well, I mean, I think there's multiple sides to it. So I don't think it's unfair. As a coach, you are, you know, the best coaches hold all their players responsible. Everyone gets coached. Players like to be coached. They want feedback. They want to be coached hard. Everyone has a different style of accepting it. But players generally want to be coached. The relationship has to be at a certain level. Mm-hmm. The communication has to be at a certain level. If it's not, you start to lose buy-in. Mm-hmm. And you start to, okay, well, I'm trying to do it your way. It's not really working for me. Other side is saying, hey, I really need you to do this. If there's nothing in between those two thoughts, you land in a bad place. That's just that's just the heart of it. And that's you end up with two sides who feel a certain way about something who may have valid complaints or valid thoughts. So how do we marry this together? Optically, if you're watching, you know, from big picture, you see a Charlotte team that has Conk and Nipple doing amazing things, that is working to try and establish habits, as you mentioned. And so, okay, it doesn't have to be all of just LaMelo. And then you have the stretches where LaMelo is kind of losing the handle, turning it over, defense, the lapses. It stands out more with how Charlotte has been playing for the majority of the season. Now, the issue is he is just coming back from an injury. So, I mean, these things do take time.
He needs grace.
Yeah. Number two, how do you take it if you're LaMelo, in theory? Okay, so we're doing different things. That's cool. I'm trying to buy into it. That's cool. It's not working. We're losing. So you want to, is it my fault that we're losing? It's on me? That's where the communication has to be there.
Yeah.
And maybe it is. Like, this is reckless speculation to a degree. But if you don't have that to a certain degree, or it's not happening the way it should, or things are misinterpreted, you know, two sides can look at it and be like, oh, I'm taking what you're doing as this. Oh, you're not bought in. You don't care. Oh, the coach always blaming me. You know, that type of beat.
Yeah. I think you hit it there. Like, one, just the overall point of how important communication is. And also, as we're dealing with this, or the potential of this, if we want to just make sure we, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, all that good stuff, is how is the message being received? If Charles Lee is saying, hey, I need your defensive effort to be better so we can get this defense to another level, and LaMelo is taking it as, oh, it's my fault the defense is bad, it's not going to fly if that's the bit. If Charles Lee says, LaMelo, I need you to be aggressive and set the tone on offense, and now LaMelo's taking 30-foot threes because he's good at making those shots, et cetera, and Charles Lee is just like, oh, this dude is loafing around. He's not getting us into our stuff. You can see where a disconnect could be there too. LaMelo's like, well, I am being aggressive. I am trying to set a tone. Like, he has multiple like 10, 12, 14 point quarters this season. These are the shots that I get going with. But you can see where the perception is like, well, you're not hitting the paint. You're not, oh. It just gets kind of weird. And so I do think, to your point, Steve, it's important for them to kind of establish, okay, what exactly, not what do you need from me? Because I think those are very, that's pretty clear. But like, is there any kind of leeway to what it can look like with me trying to give you what you need from me? And I think that's more gray area offensively than defensively. Because again, I think the defense is pretty clear. You just have to be attentive off the ball. You got to navigate screens. Like that just feels like non-negotiable. As someone that's not a literal like Hornets team member, like, this is just watching the Hornets analyze the basketball, like, yeah, that just has to be better. But offensively, in terms of the approach, the process for LaMelo, that feels like more open-ended. What is aggression to him may just be different to what is aggression for Charles Lee, if that's even a thing, and how that kind of impacts the rest of the offense. Because as far as needing him, just take a cursory glance at the on-off data for the Charlotte Hornets with LaMelo Ball and without LaMelo Ball. It is very clear he still, with all of this, makes them a better basketball team. So, like, that also shouldn't be lost in this. But it's, again, it's just kind of a bummer that we're here right now. Again, it's not, this came out yesterday. There's going to be a trade by Friday or anything. Like, it's not solved, I don't think. But, yeah, it's just kind of a bummer. Like, I don't think it, Ah.
Well, I mean, time will tell. I mean, we've heard a lot of different reports. So again, nothing certain set in stone. I'm intrigued to see, okay, where would he in theory go if this is for real? This is legit. Because point guard is one of those positions that teams generally feel good about who they've got for the most part. Mm-hmm. And if the team is playing well, why are we rocking the boat? So you start to scan the league and it's like, well, who would do this? And, you know, you can kind of roll out the Ja Morant, Trae Young joke if you would like.
Oh.
But it's like, okay, Western Conference is probably a no from everyone, right? Like, we're good. Portland?
I thought about Portland because I think they do just have the interesting cast of guards and wings and bigs that you can kind of build a deal around. And they do still just have like the big Jeremy Grant salary if you want to build it around that plus insert, you know, like Grant plus Scoot, I think would get you close, if not all the way there salary wise. Not saying either team would do it, but just literally building out the bones of what a deal could look like. I think those two get you pretty close. Like Portland's interesting to me. Among the West Coast teams, like a lot of the online stuff that I saw was like, oh, LaMelo's just a very obvious Clipper. And like, I don't think salary wise, you could build that out. It just gets difficult. If you want to laugh, you want to do LaMelo for Kawhi, But no, that's obviously not going to happen. I do have more Clipper trade thoughts a little bit later in this episode. I'll tease that one, but you know, can't really go there. Sacramento, I guess, would be the actual obvious West Coast teams are going to build it out because they probably just need a point guard, which you're then reminded that they had two high level ones at a time and no longer have either one of those. But Sac's probably the one if you want to build that out, Steve.
What about the Dallas Mavericks?
Dallas is a tough one just because they're already a second apron team, which yuck. Based on the Luka of it all, and then it's this financially. So what was this going to be like? They can't aggregate, so it's just going to be Anthony Davis for LaMelo and something else.
You know, I didn't think past just the name of the team. Come on, buddy. Come on, pal. You think I'm right here talking about Flex and Floppy to open up the trade machine? Come on, brother.
You're a multifaceted human being.
This is true. My last thought was the Pelicans.
So there is like a semi-serious who would be making that deal question that I could toss out, but I'm not going to do that on this podcast. If they don't have their pick. So like if this is very much we have to win and get into the play-in so we don't give insert team here a top five pick or something, like they would have the motivation for it. And I think they do technically have the salaries for it. I can check real quick to see if they are a first or a second apron team to see what kind of restrictions they'd have there. But you could build something out. I guess my question gets to zoom all the way out first. LaMelo making about $38 million this year. It's around 40.8 next year. It's 43.6 after that. It's 46.4 after that. So he's very much locked in. Moving forward. So like this isn't he's a free agent, so the leverage is lower, etc. Like you are just getting a 24-year-old for the next 3 to 4 years. So that would change things. So if you're New Orleans, like, you're not giving up Jeremiah Fears in a LaMelo deal, are you?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. You're not giving up Fears. You're not giving up Queen, I don't think. And so from there, like pick stuff gets interesting. Like they can get to the salaries. But like the pick stuff gets kind of interesting. I don't know.
I don't know either. But they've Hornets next two games back to back this weekend. Home against Clippers at the Hawks. So
that is a funny one. Can I toss out some Eastern Conference LaMelo teams that
sure.
at least intrigue me?
Sure.
So I think one, Toronto can just be in any conversation they want to because of the contracts they have. And I think they have possession of all of their future picks moving forward. And so first thought was Toronto could do it if they wanted. RJ and Emmanuel Quickley contracts.
I hope the second thought is they're the 2 seed and their defense is playing well. Why would we do that right now?
That's also fair. Okay. That is also fair. But I'm just saying, like, they can get in the room pretty easily if they want to do this. Of course, now it's posed to me. I have my thought on it, but I will ask you, Steve, because I don't think I got yours. LaMelo Miami.
No.
It's a no for you.
We haven't even gotten Tyler Hero back. And Davion Mitchell is driving like crazy with Norm Powell playing well and Jaime also driving. Why?
Okay. I mean, what if Hero goes to Charlotte in this deal?
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
at least not right now.
Okay. Understood. How would you feel about Orlando?
That would be interesting.
That one got you. A new one would.
I just said it would be interesting.
That's all I needed.
Who are they giving up?
In terms of salary, like, it kind of has to be Suggs, I think, is at around 35.
Oh, then no.
You're like, nah, okay.
Headband around the neck or a man that has to stay.
I mean, he's already trying to make passes like LaMelo. So, I mean, I guess you already have the real thing. Now, if I could just get this ball for like 45 seconds, I am a big Jalen Suggs fan. And as he, you know, got off the minutes restriction, et cetera, like, the defense is good. He's really made me laugh in some of my Magic watches and rewatches this year. Because, like, there is a pass or two per game where it's just like, brother, why did you think that was going to work? Why are we going behind the back to the corner when that guy is just there already? Like, you're not – it's just a couple of those.
Hey, man, basketball, it's a rhythm sport. It's a feel sport. You start thinking too much with this – you're missing out on the plays you can make. You got the ball in your hand, you might make a mistake, but you got to go out there and let it rip sometimes. And I respect going out there and playing. I was a thinker. I was very smart. Mm. But overthinking doesn't help you in the heat of the moment. You got to just play. Go play.
Okay.
Let that man hoop.
Okay. Hey, listen, that's fair. And again, it's easy to kind of excuse some of those because of how hard he plays defensively. Like, he's just an absolute dog on that end. So he's probably just earned him one or two of those anyway. But it is just kind of jarring to see some of those on film this year. That's all I wanted to get to. Yeah, is anybody else in the LaMelo business? Like, I don't.
Probably not.
Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point. Hopefully they're able to mend whatever needs to be mending and this blows over and the Hornets are able to make some what constitutes as a run for them for where they're at. But there you go.
Speaking of runs, don't run away right now. Come back, stick with us after this break.
And we are back, and we're still technically posting up, Steve. Can I toss in a team? It's less teams that's making me think. It's more a team that's making me sad right now.
Okay. I don't know if that was the vibes I was looking for going into the weekend, but I get it.
we'll be quick. We'll be quick. The Sacramento Kings. This is not what it was supposed to look like this year. And, like, they're obviously dealing with some injuries. Now Domantas Sabonis out 3 to 4 weeks with a partially torn meniscus, I believe. And so that also puts more of a damper on it. And he's kind of been in and out of the lineup anyway this year, so it's been kind of difficult to establish the kind of consistency you want, at least offensively. But as of recording, Steve, a 3-13 record per cleaning the glass, 27th on offense, 28th on defense, 29th in net rating. And it's just, I wish there was more for me to, like, point at with this group. Like, I talked about Zach LaVine a couple weeks ago. At the time, it was career high usage in terms of the off-ball screen stuff for him. And I like the ways they were getting him touches on the move, some of the high wide pin downs and stuff for him. The drives were up, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that's kind of cooled down. Like, DeMar's been fine. But, like, the defense has kind of been what it's been. I was excited to watch Dee Clifford play basketball, and he's playing more basketball. But, like, that isn't enough to completely override everything else that it's kind of been for the Kings on both ends. I don't know. Like, I feel like this is a point that I made a couple of years ago with them where it's become so easy to just do LOL Kings, and that's just kind of it. And I don't think that's fair to them because, like, even when they aren't as good, there are still fun things to point at. But, like, this hasn't been a super enjoyable watch for me as of late. I'd hate that they're in this spot post, like, Fox trade and all this stuff. It just has not gone well. Like, Keegan Murray just made his debut, so hopefully that adds some more joy to some of the King watches. But like, it's just been tough.
Joy?
Yeah.
Joy? You talking about Inside Out? I know you're not talking about the Sacramento Kings.
Wow.
I've been a big supporter of the Beam, and I love that the team have. They built. Hey, what is this? You lose four straight at home? 132, 101, 144, 117, 122, 108, 133, 100. And then go on the road and lose four more, including 137, 96 to the Memphis Grizzlies. And this is no disrespect to the Memphis Grizzlies and all my Memphis people out there. Just earmuffs real quick. We have spent the majority of this season trying to figure out what the Grizzlies were, are, could be. And you gave us 48 minutes of the tape. What kind of compete level is that? What is that? Vince Williams Jr. had 15 assists. I have that number right, right? He had 15 assists, right?
He had too many assists is what he had. Well, no, shout out to Vince Williams.
Kentavious Caldwell Pope had 7 assists. If you add up Vince Williams' assists with Kentavious Caldwell Pope's assists, and you throw in, let's just go Santi Aldama, that's 25 if I could do math real quick. Guess how many assists the Kings had?
I'm going to say 22.
24.
Ah, I'm so close.
And now you got DeMar DeRozan playing 15 minutes, taking 3 shots. You got Malik Monk playing 14 minutes, taking 4 shots. Dennis Schroeder was your acquisition to start. Now he's off the bench playing 20 minutes, 25 minutes, taking 8 shots.
Shout out Russ.
Russ has competed. Russ is giving it his all. Zach LaVine's trying to get buckets. I understand it. But what have you built? What is your identity? What can I expect from you every single night? What do you do defensively? What do you do offensively? You don't even have Domantas Sabonis handoffs anymore.
Yeah, that's been not necessarily the weird one, but like, I just wonder how much of this is we're trying to work Sabonis in. Plus, we have these guards. We got Dennis, et cetera. Like, it's been more pick and roll, less handoff stuff, less post-up stuff for Sabonis this year. And, like, I kind of get the logic behind it because of the personnel. But it's also, like, to your point about establishing a foundation, establishing an identity, it just feels free flow without the requisite skill or complementary shooting to really go free flow.
It's okay if they didn't have the complementary shooting. They had talent. If you tell me you got a team with Sabonis, DeMar, Zach LaVine, make all the Bulls jokes you want, Schroeder, Monk, you have basketball players that can make basketball plays. The only problem is who is put in a position to do the thing that they do well? Russ goes out and gets after it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who else?
No, I was just going to say, like, him and LaVine really are the only walking paint touches on the roster. And, like, Dennis a little bit, but even then, he's seeing unders and also help.
Well,
depending on the lineup that he's out there with. So it's just like, it's...
Yeah, we got Dennis Schroeder around pick and roll. The league just went under. Hey, DeMar's in the post. Help or double. Yeah. How many times has Malik Monk scored 10 points this year, Nikaz?
I'm going to say 8 without looking at the game log.
Well, that was too quick of a guess, brother.
Oh.
Entirely too quick of a guess.
Oh, well, while Steve said, I thought you just had that.
No, I was spur of the moment. Also, you're going to be incredibly upset. 9.
I am going to be incredibly upset, yeah. At least it's not the Price is Right thing. If it was 7, I would have been really upset. Would have lost. But no, it's just made me sad. And so, like, it's kind of brought me bigger picture to a familiar feeling that I've had. For you made, like, the Bulls alluded to potential Bulls jokes, but similar to what I've said about Chicago, that era is like, hey, I don't think this ceiling is high enough to really invest in this. Y'all should probably strip this down and go elsewhere. And the Bulls have done that.
But you,
you're
already here.
I'm kind of here. Like, all jokes aside, I'm kind of here. Like, if Sabonis was like 25, then it's just like, all right, well, let's get DeMar and maybe LaVine out. We have Sabonis to build around, et cetera, et cetera. I just kind of want to turn this over to Neek and Keegan and Reyno and insert young people you can get here. Like, this is not the context for DeMar. You've already alluded to it. This is just unfair to Sabonis. You remember when we had our conversation about the trade for him and Tyrese, and I was just very much, Sabonis is very good, and he's probably like better right now. I would not do that for Tyrese Halliburton, et cetera. And all Sabonis did was play incredibly well and help lead the Kings to their first playoff berth in forever. And so now that he's in the middle of all of this, it's just not fair to him. And he, again, he's dealing with the partially torn meniscus on top of this. But like, I just kind of want to see Sabonis in a different spot, in a different context. I want to see LaVine in a different spot, in a different context. I don't want DeMar going out like this. I would just rather them, especially with this upcoming draft class, and I, again, say this as not Mr. Draft, but, like, try to get in that top three or top four if you can. And, like, let's just actually build a unit. Because on top of all of this, the last thing I'll say, and I'll toss it to you, I feel like Doug Christie is, like, appealing to this group every postgame about effort and representing Sacramento and California as a concept. And it's like, you shouldn't feel the need to do that as consistently as he's felt the need to do that. Why like, not? I worry about like just what the collective mood and the buy-in is.
Why should you not have to do that?
Because I think players should come in with a requisite level of effort and like on-court pride.
Yeah, correct. But what if it's not there? What do you do?
If it's not there, I guess you have to do what you do as a coach. I'm just saying in general, I would like for him to not be in a spot to where he is preaching about that in particular. It should be, hey, there are defensive breakdowns we need to clean up, or there's some ball movement stuff we need to get better at. Not be proud to wear the jersey you're not playing hard enough. I've made this point before. I just don't think coaches should need to do that.
And I will once again say it's tricky. Yes, on a surface level, yes, you should expect professional athletes or whatever to come in with the effort and the mindset. There is a human aspect to it as well. And you, as a coach, you have to hit the right buttons at the right time. Mm-hmm. If you've already tapped several angry press conferences, we're going to fix it. Defense is going to get better. It's an absolute must. All the things, right? Mm-hmm. If you have had three or four of those in the first 16 games, where are you escalating to? You can't hit 10 that often.
Yeah.
You throw in that it's not landing for whatever reason. This is not a personal attack. I'm just talking about what I see in my face. It's not landing. The blowouts are continuing. You've already tinkered with the starting lineup. You've tinkered with minutes. What are you platforming? What are you running on? How are you going to get the buy-in if all of these things have already taken place? Strangely enough, again, they're three games out of the play-in, which the Western Conference, buddy,
yeah.
Very funny. That's what just, well, I mean, it's 9-10 is just, hey, would you like to play a team to possibly play another team to play the Oklahoma City Thunder, which is an interesting concept, but like it can't be this. And if you're already kind of going through those and it hasn't gotten better, it's not awesome. It's not awesome.
It's not. And that's where I circle back to. Like, let's get some assets. Let's get some younger pieces in the building. Let's just give some try-hard guys to Doug Christie, if nothing else. Because, like, I don't think, you mentioned there are three games out of play in, and there is talent here, but this is 8 straight losses, and like the morale just seems to be in the toilet right now. And it's just like, in a season like this, in a conference like this, with a draft class coming in like this, is it even worth trying to resuscitate whatever this group was supposed to be that they haven't really been able to establish because of injury stuff? And now the literal center of it all is going to be out at least a month. Like, it just feels like signs are pointing to, hey, let's just go ahead and get some of these guys to other spots. Which, to that point, Steve, I have some thoughts. And also an article dropped on yahoosports.com. But I have some thoughts about what the Kings could do at the top three. Can I interest you in some potential landing spots or just some interesting roster fits that I have for some of these guys?
Well, one, very dangerous to hit the reset button in the Western Conference. But
that's true.
Go ahead and let me know the trade destinations.
Okay, so very funny, as I was like, I had written a Sabonis piece, I was the Sabonis section rather, was working on the LaVine / DeRozan portion when the news trickled in that Sabonis was going to be out or reevaluated in 3 to 4 weeks. So that doesn't even mean that he's just out for that. It could just be longer than that. So I'm just like, oh, that's just tremendous timing then. That's great. That's great. So that throws a wrench into value, I would imagine, if he's literally on demand right now. But in terms of the teams that would intrigue me in terms of fit, I thought about Atlanta. But I think it's easy to build out a deal. Like, there's a very LOL worthy, like, Sabonis for Trey thing if you want to do that. But I don't think either team would really do that. Or Sacramento would be more in line to do that than Atlanta would. I just put it that way. But you could build it out with the Kristaps expiring if you want. We just talked about the Atlanta Hawks, what they're doing defensively and the activity that they play with. Like, scheme-wise, that seems like a fit for what Sabonis is. I think he's better at the level than he is at a drop or with some of the switches. You do have a bunch of speed and athleticism around him, so you could insulate him to a degree. Offensively, we also talked a little bit about what the half-court offense is. He could slot into that. So I think you can kind of build out the bones of a deal there if you want to do that. How would you feel about an Atlanta fit? Okay. I think the tough thing with Sabonis is because of the type of player he is, the high level hub, but probably like sub capital E elite hub. So he needs touches, but like, does that maximize everything? Then defensively there are the limitations there, but he's still very good. But no, like Atlanta intrigued me. Golden State naturally intrigued me. Like, this feels like a very clean offensive fit, if nothing else. Now, him and Draymond would have to have a conversation about the man stepping on his chest. But that is an offensive fit at the very least that intrigued me. There was the early smoke about the Jonathan Kuminga interest with Sacramento. I think that would have to be some sort of three-team deal because of the aprons that these teams are dealing with. But it feels manageable at the very least if they wanted to do that. So how would you feel about Sabonis and Golden State?
I would like that offensive fit.
Okay.
His dribble handoffs and what Golden State likes to do makes a lot of sense to me.
Okay. There we go. And the last one, again, a team that could get into virtually any conversation they want because of the picks and the contracts that they have, the Toronto Raptors.
Why? They're good. Well, why are they making trades?
Because they want to be better, maybe.
They have a hub and they have Mamu.
But yeah, I mean, Mamu's staying put. He's been very good. I'm glad you brought up Mamu.
Hold on. You ain't spent the last 4 years of my life telling me about Jakob Poeltl and you traded him to the Kings.
Well, Jakob Poeltl has to have a working back. Right. But when he's been on the court, like the screening and the passing has certainly been strong. Defense has been more hit or miss. But again, we're not going to do a full, another Raptor segment, at least not right now. But you could upgrade on the center spot. Again, they have the contracts, they have the picks, sprinkling if they want to or if they feel the need to. Do you like the fit at the very least?
In theory, yeah. But no, okay. They're playing well.
Okay. I'm just exploring the fits right now. To Zach LaVine. Have a repeat in Atlanta. Have a repeat with Toronto. I want to ask you about these two. How would you feel about Zach LaVine in Detroit?
No.
Okay. Why is it a no for you? Is it just they're playing well, or is there some kind of class that you anticipate there?
Detroit is playing very well. They have a structure already. Cade's got the ball in his hands. They have buy-in. They play defense. I don't think this specific team needs a Zach LaVine. If Detroit's going to make a move, it should be a smaller move to complement the roster. I don't think you need to take a swing.
Okay. Well, the counter is that Cade is just seeing just an ungodly amount of bodies, and a lot of that is injury stuff. But like, I do think the shooting would certainly help, and having another guy that can get to the paint like LaVine would help the offense. Seems to be the drawback for me.
Jaden Ivey, LaMarcus Sasser, Danis Jenkins, Tobias Harris.
Well, about the rim stuff with Tobias Harris, but the shooting would certainly help. But okay, how do you feel about Philadelphia for Zach LaVine?
I would get it more, but no.
Okay.
Who would they be? Like, they've changed things to where there's more drive and kick, but I feel like it would be him cooking in a vacuum to a degree with Maxi.
Yeah, so you don't love it. Okay.
I'm listening, though.
Okay. I just think, okay, the downhill juice plus the shooting. And if you have any concerns about, especially while Embiid is like in and out of the lineup and stuff, if you're worried about any of like the non-maxi scoring when he does have to take a break, because you don't want him playing 40 minutes a night as Philly has been comfortable doing throughout the season. But like take some pressure off. Like, I think that would be helpful. Like, I think this would have to be built around, it had to be like Paul George, just in terms of the salary.
Yeah,
so this is PG plus, we like Jarrett McCain, but he's not ironclad as part of our future core. That's where the come, because I don't think you'd get Paul George straight up just because of where he is. Like, he's older than LaVine, bigger contract, I think longer contract technically. So like, I think there would have to be some kind of sweetener from Philly side, I believe.
I would hope it's not not Jarrett McCain.
Yeah, but just kind of spitballing on that. Yeah, that's kind of, in terms of the fit, like, I like that one. But okay, those are the four I had for LaVine. But I would ask, are there any teams between Sabonis or LaVine that you think would be interesting for either of those two that I didn't mention?
No, we're good so far. Who's okay. Next? DeMar?
DeMar, yeah. I have the Clippers for DeMar.
More unction? I'm down with it.
More like, I think this would need to be built around like Bogdanovich's contract. But someone sans Kawhi Leonard has to score in that perimeter room.
Now hold on. Can I raise my hand?
I mean, sans James Harden, excuse me.
I was about to say, someone get this brother James Harden some help. They asking him to do a whole lot. That man had 24 in the first half and they was down by 12. Was that the bit against the Mets? Come on.
It can't be that. So yeah, I misspoke. I mean, James Harden. Obviously, they're hoping to get Kawhi Leonard back, though this absence is really starting to linger. I just hope he's good. But yeah, I don't think it's difficult for the Clippers to get 2D salaries to make something like this work. There is a bit of a homecoming for DeMar. Like, that makes sense to me. If they want to try to save this season, I think they will. They don't have control of their first round pick. They are in danger of giving Cam Boozer to the Thunder. You don't want
Unction intensifies. All right.
That feels manageable. Other team I want to toss out, Steve, was Milwaukee.
Very much
in the, hey, we need to be able to score the basketball when Giannis goes to the bench, because they largely have not been able to do that. Like, he has one of the largest on-off splits in terms of the overall offense in the entire NBA. And so they have multiple pathways to get to the DeMar salary. Like, it could just be DeMar for Kuz, which we do have prior interest in Kyle Kuz from Sacramento side to lean on if we want to build that out. Or you can go, I think, like Bobby Portis plus a three-letter point guard that we're not going to discuss here and other stuff. They can get there. So they have pathways to do this. How would you feel about DeMar in Milwaukee?
The scoring would help. I'd be very intrigued to see what Bucks fans think about that one, though.
I'm already expected to be yelled at by a Discord user Eeyore. That's fine. But yeah, I'm built for this. True to this, not new to this.
Got him. Who's the next team? What is this?
those were the ironclad teams that I had. But like, there's other teams I thought about that I just couldn't like quite get there.
Okay, that's fine. DeMar. Where do we put DeMar?
Because it's just like, salary wise, like, they're, if we mention the Clippers, you could also mention the Lakers, but it's like, they don't need that when they already have LeBron and Luka and Austin Reeves. Like, I don't know if I'm giving up, unless you could literally do like Jared Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent. And even then, I mean, Vanderbilt's practically out of rotation at this point, but you probably need Gabe Vincent. So they have somebody aside from Marcus Smart that can defend guards. So like, I don't know if they want to do that. And again, the offense isn't the problem for the Lakers. So like, I don't think they would do that, but that was a team I briefly thought about. Like, I already had LaMelo in my head, so I was like, Charlotte, for, let's get an adult in the room that could also score, but like, I don't think they would do that. So that was one. The funny one that I thought about, Steve, was Chicago.
Okay.
And I just, I
okay,
but you could make, like, they have expirings, you could make the argument for it, but it's just like, I don't even know if they want to do that. I mean, I think DeMar, by all intents and purposes, loves Chicago, but like, that I couldn't write about that in good conscience, but that is a team that I thought about. It was like, oh, this is kind of interesting.
This is a quick thought, right? Because you did not believe in the Bulls, made fun of the Kings for becoming the Bulls, and then almost traded DeMar back to Chicago. That's the math.
Yeah. I mean, at least he wouldn't be like the best. That's fine. But anyway.
Was that all the Kings you were trying to trade? Was there someone else?
And I went with the big three for this arc. My initial pitch was like, let me just do like a Sacramento Kings trade primer so I could get Keon Ellis literally anywhere else. But I was like, nah, let's just do the big three. So those were the three. Those were the three players. Those were the teams that I thought about.
Fantastic work. Hopefully,
there we go.
Hopefully the Kings will do more with what they have, because this, it can't be this. Was it 7 days ago? He said, respect the jersey properly. Come on, man. Can't do this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Steve. Like, if you're saying this, and this ain't even the first one, like, it's, hey.
Yeah, man.
It just feels bad. The Kings fans deserve better than what this product has been. We'll put it that way.
Well, speaking of deserving, hit the horns, man.
Oh, darn. I'll just quickly say, Portland, I see you. I see you. We're keeping tabs. We'll save it for a future episode, but I see you. I'm not liking what I'm seeing right now. But thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. We're here every Tuesday and Friday. We'll give the quick reminder. We are going to be going to the mailbag next week. So if you have basketball questions, NBA, W, Unrivaled Season, the Unrivaled Media Day, things are perking up. So that's been fun. Got to talk to Noel Quinn yesterday. But if you have basketball questions, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Follow me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can catch Steve on socials at Steve Jones 20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.